Hello, I'm Emily Guerra, your host on Puentes, Bridges to the Community. On this edition, we continue with the last part of my interview with J. Paul Taylor, Mesillero, retired legislator, educator, community leader, and arts patron. He takes us through a tour of his historic house on the plaza in Mesilla, which he has donated to the Museum of New Mexico.
Glad to be here, Amelia.
Well, let's go back in time. How did you start your collection? What made you keep up? A lot of people will renovate their homes, get rid of things, and throw things, but you've collected. Now, I understand you come from a pioneering family from New Mexico. Let's go to that for a little bit, and then we'll continue on to present day.
Okay, well, my mother was Margarita Romero, and she was from the Lopez Romero family, from northern New Mexico. And as a matter of fact, her family goes back to Francisco Lopez. This portrait is right here. Francisco Lopez and Bartolome Romero came in 1598 as first settlers. So they've been in New Mexico except for the Pueblo Revolt of that year of the revolt when people went south to El Paso. But they went back. Some of the people stayed in Paso del Norte, which is now Ciudad Juarez. So I've always had a great interest in the family. My father was Scotch-Irish. He came to El Paso in 1886, and I think he always had great affection for Texas. And my mother had great affection for New Mexico. And in terms of culture, if you have an Hispanic mother, I think the culture maybe grows on you a little bit more. You know, you go to church, you go to fiestas, you attend family reunions, you do all those things. So that's sort of my background. My father was a wonderful man. He moved, as I mentioned, to El Paso in 1886, and eventually they settled on a farm in Champerino. And I love that little community. It's a wonderful little community. We still have a few acres there, and most of my friends are gone now, but we had some wonderful friends, the Salcedos, the Frescuses, the Barrios, the Donaldsons. Sam Donaldson was a neighbor. And Mrs. McGuire, who was a real character and one of the strongest women I think I've ever known. We graduated from college together. Anyway, there's that much. Now, as far as the collecting is concerned, my aunt on my father's side was a home economics teacher in Yuma, Arizona at the Indian School. And when I was 5 years old, she brought me a piece of pottery, a bowl. When I was 6 years old, she brought me another one. That started the pottery collection. But I was always interested in antiquities. So little by little, we added and added, and family things.
And when did you start having tours of the house? Was this after you decided to make this a museum or before?
Oh, we've had tours of the house for ages, it seems. No, since I was in the school business. Because I brought children from my eighth graders from Doñana School when I was a teaching principal. And part of it was to give them a source of feeling for their past. And, you know, at that time, old houses were being torn down or modified so that the character of the house was lost. And I have one student who has done absolutely wonderful work with her house. It was her grandmother's house. And so I think that's an example of what can happen if you demonstrate to students the value of antiquities and houses and vigas and ortillas, which are not often appreciated. A viga is a large beam which came from near the river years ago, and they were used as the beam on which you would put ortillas, which are branches of the cottonwood, on top of them, sometimes in irregular placement, sometimes regular. And then on top of that, one would put mud, and that would last until a big rain came. And then you would have little drips of water coming down. And so one then would put another roof, which would be leak-proof on top. So I think on this house, we probably have three different roofs.
In some homes, the old adobe homes, there were cloth or muslin cloth ceilings. Did you have that here?
We had one room with a manta. That's what it's called. And that's muslin, sort of unbleached muslin, which is sewed together, and it's soaked in water, and you let it dry a while, and then you attach it on the corner of each room and put a little piece of wood against it to hold it, and it dries. When it dries, it becomes taut, and it's just like a plastered ceiling after you put whitewash or calcimine or something like that on it.
And what was the purpose of it?
The purpose was to keep the mud from falling on someone's head. And we had one manta ceiling. I wanted to keep it, but I had some workmen here one day, and I was working at the college at the time, at the university. So I gave them directions about that ceiling. I said, now you take it down right at the corner. If it looks like it has latias, vigas under it, you can leave it, because I want to save the manta. And because that was a way of life. And I came back at noon to see how work was progressing, and they had put a big slice with a knife right through the middle. And so the manta was just hanging. So there was nothing I could do about it. So in that room, we have a pine ceiling.
So then not all of the rooms were with latilla and vigas. So in those days, you didn't grow up looking up and seeing the vigas and latillas because of the manta.
That's right, because it looked like a regular ceiling. All our rooms have vigas and latillas except the parlor. The parlor, when the Reynolds lived here, that was in the early 1900s. They had taken the vigas out, and they put a beaded ceiling in, a tongue and groove ceiling. They'd put it also in the music room. And the room they had left was the one with manta, and now it has a wooden pine ceiling, which we thought was the best answer since the manta was gone. And the rest of them have vigas and latillas. Some of them are plastered between, some of them are not.
Going back to the children coming into the tours, so what's the most important thing that you wanted to show them?
I wanted them to feel that their culture was important. And part of the culture was, of course, language, art, and that sort of thing. But part of it was where you live and how you live. And so many of them live in Doñana, particularly, and Mesilla also, with vigas and latillas in adobe homes. And it was just my method of letting people feel their deep interest in culture and where they came from, how important their mothers and fathers and grandfathers were, and how they lived. And so That was, I would say, the basic reason for the tours. When we have a tour now, and we've done this for years, I've done it individually, but we have a friends group, and they serve as docents. So I take my place, and each of them take their place, and they're well educated in terms of the furnishings and the ceilings and how the house was made. And it's very easy in the Sala Grande because I can say, look into the backyard and just think of people puddling mud to make adobes. And those adobes are put in their little form, their rectangular form. They're dried, and then they start building their house. And then they go to the river. This is a long time ago, I'm trying to point out. They go to the river, which was on the east side. Now it's on the west side. The river changed with the flood in the 60s. And so now we have the Rio Grande on the west, but we used to have it on the east, very close to Mesilla. And I'd say, well, you know, they would just go to the river. They would cut the cottonwood trees for the vigas, and they would cut the little branches for the latillas, and they would come and put those on the adobes that they had raised, and pretty soon they would have a house.
From there, what's the next step on your tour as you're going along remembering a tour that you've given on your own?
Well, I think architecture is important, but I think the way people lived, and we have antique furniture, some of it's from our family, most of it are acquisitions. So, for example, in this room, there's a pie cabinet, and it holds dishes. There's an 1880 table, which Mary and I acquired. When we got married, there was no flatware available. There was no china. There were linens. But things were very limited after the war. And so people gave us cash. We saved the cash. And we bought some antiques. So that pie cabinet's one of them. That table is another.
And in one of the patios, you have a collection of the grinders. What do you call those? The corn grinders?
Metates and manos. The manos are what you hold to grind the grain. And, of course, I have a collection of things for children. And, you know, when they come, it can be really fun. But I make them work because I say, would you identify this? And any answer they give in terms of identification is acceptable, as long as it's reasonable. So sometimes you think, oh, where did they get that? But it makes sense to them. So you want to enforce the youngster. And then after they identify them, they classify them. They can classify them if they're wood, or they can classify them if they're metal, or they can classify them if they're used. So that's just part of the thinking skills I'm trying to get across.
When did you start collecting the religious relics?
Well, religious things have been around since I was a child because my mother was Roman Catholic and Hispanic. And Hispanic and Roman Catholic used to go together very well. They don't always go together that way now. But my uncle gave me the first santo. A santo is a religious figure carved in the round. And it's Nuestra Señora de la Soledad. And it's in the living room sitting on the mantel. And from there, just any number of things I've purchased or been given. I have the music room. I say that probably should be called the San Antonio room because there are so many San Antonios in there. One of them's a family piece. And I have seen young women like you come in, and they see San Antonio, and they drop to their knees. And
why is that?
It's because San Antonio is known for helping find things. In this case, it's helping find a husband.
The music room is very special also because your mother played the piano, did she? Now, what are the old songs you still have there?
I have probably 3 volumes that my grandfather used to bind. And they would be the old Spanish songs like Las Golondrinas, La Paloma, the Schottische, which isn't Spanish. So I lived with that. I was not musical at all. I played the snare drums in high school and college. And I think I was the worst snare drummer they ever had. But I had daughters who played. And their incentive was, in school, they got the start. And one of them has a degree in voice from New Mexico State. That's Rosemary. Mary Helen has a great voice, but she doesn't think it's great. John had a very good voice, and he sometimes sang in the choir. But the boys were busy being altar boys. Mary, my wife, was an extremely talented person. She played the piano and played the piano well. She wrote well, and she had had Dr. Isabella Zimmerman as her professor at Texas Western. So she was always interested in research and writing. And actually, she completed one book. And another she had completed, but it still has to be edited and finalized. And she was extremely interested in living here in Mesilla. And I will say that she loved the Mesilla so that when she died, we had the rosary in our little chapel. And we didn't publish it, because we wanted room for the Mesilleros that she loved so, to find room and come. And the chapel was full of her good friends, my good friends, your good friends from Mesilla. And the bishop came, said the rosary, gave me the rosary when he had finished, and he said, "I want you to keep this. The bishop of Shanghai gave me this rosary." So it's framed in our chapel now.
When did you establish a chapel in the house?
Oh, almost from the beginning. It's a, you know, every Hispanic family used to have at least a little table with a candle and maybe a holy picture or a santo sitting on it. Now, that isn't the case always today. But years ago, you never went. And I grew up in this valley. And of course, I had all my connections in northern New Mexico. And any time I went into an Hispanic home, there was a little altar. It might have been very simple. A table, a holy picture, a candle. And so that was just part of the culture. And we're trying to carry that out now. So our house, well, when it goes, we'll have an oratorio. It's a little oratory. It's a small chapel.
Well, I really appreciate you telling us some of the history, and there's so much we could keep going on and talking about this beautiful house and how you've gone from room to room when you give tours and you go into detail about each of the items.
Well, and now, since we have docents, they have docent instructions, and I have taken them through. And so if they talked about every item, he would be here forever. So they pick out certain items in the house to talk about. And most of them deal with the culture or life since Mesilla was founded in 1850.
Thank you again. At 93 years old, retired legislator, educator, community leader, and patron of the arts, Mesillero J. Paul Taylor. Thank you very much. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.